Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Mike Dempsey here. Fat Tony's here. Somebody just got called to the principal's office. However, Jeff Lagerman was here moments ago, Tony, as we were going over the film work.
Yeah.
He's put in the time. He's watched the film of the Jaguars' performance or lack thereof against Washington. And we're kind of going through all the positions on the offensive line and, let Jeff express his sentiments on how they played. I think you probably know which direction that will trend, but when he returns. But got a knock on the window right behind him. Now, Gus Bradley had already walked by, flashed us the peace sign.
Yep.
You know, typical Gus. You're not going to get Gus down, okay? Gus is going to show up. He's going to grind. He's going to work hard. He's going to maintain a ridiculously infectious level of enthusiasm. We saw it last year. If those first eight games didn't get you down, chances are he's got Teflon-coated personality. But then he gave a quick – it was interesting, Tony. He gave a knock on the window and a little come-here finger to Jeff Lagerman. Lagerman goes, I may be gone a few minutes. So he may have seen that look before. I don't know. Maybe – do you think Gus is perhaps bargaining with him right now? What can I do to get you to not discuss the tape
right
this week? I don't know.
Well, I know they usually record – something on Tuesdays after the show. So they may be discussing...
They may be recording that as we speak.
Right. They may be discussing whatever's going to be coming up on that show tonight.
It's all good. Hey, you know what? We're at the beck and call of the coach, not the other way around. But Loggy will join us here. Coming up shortly, we'll hear from Gus Bradley as well. Yesterday, meeting with the media kind of mid-afternoon and had a chance to at least reflect a little bit, watch a little film of his own and talk about the Jags' performance in week two. Hope you watched Monday Night Football last night. Jags not the only team in the AFC South at 0-2. Does that make...
No, they're not.
Are you happier about that? Does that make the Colts more dangerous coming in here? I don't know if it makes them more dangerous or not, Tony. I mean, were they not going to try to win anyway if they were 1-1? Of course
right.
They would, right?
I don't buy any of that kind of talk.
The desperation talk?
No, I don't buy any of that. Look, they're coming to Jacksonville. They're taking on a divisional opponent. Whether they were 0-2 or 1-1, I don't think the game plan for Indianapolis coming into this game changes.
But Tony, the level of desperation would rise.
Whatever. I mean, it's week three. I don't think teams that feel like they're going to be in contention start panicking when it gets to week three of the National Football League. But look, this is a Colts team that's coming in that you saw last night. They can be had. Defensively, that's a team that can be had. And it's happened for the first 2 weeks. Now, granted, that's going up against Denver and Philadelphia. That's a bit different than what Jacksonville's going to trot out there on offense. But they can be exposed on the defensive side of the ball, and the offensive line is still not very good. So can the Jaguars take advantage of those two things?
That they might be able to take advantage of. Indy's offensive line having issues, okay? And right now, if you're them, don't you start Ahmad Bradshaw? Isn't he your starting running back? Didn't he look three times better than Trent Richardson last night? And Richardson had one of his better games since he's become a Colt. But it was just grinding out that 4 yards per carry.
Well, and it was every third down. It was every time they got in red zone, it was Bradshaw coming onto the field.
Anytime they're behind.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear which running back they trust more. And look, if you're the Colts, use them while you got them. Bradshaw's going to get hurt at some point. That's just his track record. He plays so violently that at some point he's going to get himself hurt. And use them while you can, and then you'll have to go back to 3 yards and Richardson.
We may peek ahead a little bit to that matchup coming up this Sunday. As the Jags encourage you to come out and please protect the bank for the season opener. Tickets are on sale right now at 633-2000 or visit jaguars.com/tickets if you want to be part of the home opener experience. Today's Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you to kind of reevaluate the AFC South. 2 weeks in, you got Houston undefeated, Tony. To the point where I enjoyed this so much, particularly because it's your team coming up, but just the idea that a team that was 2-14 can be asked the question, hey, is this a trap game coming up for you guys as you take on the Giants this week because they're 0-2? Now, I find it amusing because it's your team, the Giants, that
sure
are considered the trap team for the team that had the number one pick in the draft this year.
Well, yeah, that's a must-win game for the Giants. They stink.
They're right. Well, if the Giants win that, it's going to be the difference between, you know, 3 and 4 victories
sure.
this season.
I mean, you know, it's the difference between picking first and fifth. Come on, guys.
But if you're Houston, you're thinking, hey, you know what? This is what we thought we were going to do last year. We've got some things going here. We're winning games. It's a winnable division. I don't think Houston's as good. Well, certainly, it's 2 games in, so it's not like they're going undefeated this year, but I don't think they're clearly the cream of the AFC South. So we're asking you today, with 2 weeks in,
sure.
how would you handicap the division?
And look, this is a Houston team that we talked about how difficult it was going to be for the Jags going on the road for the first 2 weeks. I mean, this is a young team, and I heard Pete Prisco talking about this last night on Jaguars Monday.
Pete!
And he thought that this team would really struggle with this game going to Washington. That it didn't matter what the matchups were, that a team this young going on the road twice in a row to begin the season, that there were going to be some issues for this team. There clearly were. It was bigger than that, though. It wasn't just that they were on the road twice. Houston has gotten to play home against Washington at Oakland. I mean, that's about as soft as it can be to start a season. And now they get to play the New York Giants, who are really bad right now. So, look, it's a soft start for them. On the other hand, I mean, Indianapolis has gone to Denver and then hosted Philadelphia.
Sure,
that's a tough start.
They played a couple of division winners. They played the AFC champ. You're right. Tough start, absolutely. But you say that about the soft start for Houston. And I'm not saying Washington's great. They're certainly, we don't think they're going to be. But they did hold them to 6 points at home, and that's a team that just put up 41 this week against the Jags. So, you know, you could say everything that could go wrong did go wrong in that contest. But regardless, they're 2-0. Titans 1-1. Look, it's still early in the season. I contend you get this win against Indy. And maybe it's very difficult to envision that happening for Jag fans after what you saw this weekend. And honestly, it's difficult for me to envision if this game gets up into the 20s, how they're going to score enough points to make that happen, unless they force turnovers, maybe get a defensive score, or at least set themselves up with a short field. Because, Tony, the thing that the Colts have struggled with early in the season has been covering the tight end. Mm-hmm. All right, Julius Thomas absolutely eviscerated them in week 1. Zach Ertz is solid, not spectacular, but a very solid game last night. And they had a ton of trouble keeping up with guys catching the ball out of the backfield, particularly Darren Sproles yesterday. No Mercedes Lewis, though, to try to take advantage of that matchup.
No Mercedes. You have to wonder with what you saw last night, and I'm not saying he's a playmaker on the same level, but do you try to get Denard Robinson more involved in this game plan?
Yes.
I just get him in some kind of space and try to expose that defense that isn't very fast.
When Jeff gets back in here, this is one of the things I want to talk to him about today. Why weren't there more screen passes in the game plan? And, you know, we can all sit here and everybody wants to critique the game plan and, you know, they watch a film, they know the tendencies, they're paid to do that. That doesn't mean they're flawless, okay? And for the Jags, you didn't really see them trying to, with the rush coming so heavy at Henny. What's the best way to slow it down? Just flip it right over their heads and have a guy circling around out of the backfield. And until the last drive of the game, when the game was already decided, we didn't really see that.
Right.
So, you're right. Let's see that with Denard Robinson. Let's see that with somebody that's got some quickness, because Darren Sproles was the biggest part of that Philadelphia victory last night, catching those little dump downs and, you know, making a guy miss. And that's part of it, though. You got to make that first guy miss. He was running like a crazy man in the open field last night. Lauren Brooks is here. Hello, Lauren. How are you this morning?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I told Lauren earlier today that if my sister were here, I'd give her a big kiss, because Lauren and I tied in the Listener Fantasy League yesterday. It was epic, Lauren.
All I needed was one more point.
Oh, you had it, too.
Then again, all you needed was one more point.
Well, that's true. But I could have used just one point this week from Marcus Colston, who, rumor has it, actually played the game and didn't score any points for me this week. But Andrew Luck had the victory wrapped up for you, and there they are at the 22-yard line. And he throws a pick. Oh, negative points. You're back into a tie with me.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia goes down and scores, and then they go run, incomplete pass, and never touch the ball again. Thought it was a spectacular way to wrap up week 2 in the National.
I thought it was a horrible way to wrap up. All I needed was that one non-pick, and then I'm good to go.
That's all you needed, right?
Yeah.
All they need to do is kick a field goal there, and they win the football game.
Well, and it should have been a holding.
I agree.
I
mean, it should have been a penalty on that play, too, so that's even more salt in the wound.
Correct. I know. Rewatching that, yeah, exactly.
Absolutely fantastic. But, you know, look, for all the praise Andrew Luck gets, the one thing you can't do there is throw an interception. Sure. Whether it's holding on the play or not, you cannot put your team in the situation because you're already well within field goal range of Adam Vinatieri, and that probably ices the game with a 10-point lead. You're talking about, what, roughly 5 minutes left in the game?
There was like 5:10.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, you're probably going to win that football game with a 10-point lead at that point in time. But that wasn't the case as Philadelphia able to steal one in Indy last night. You want to get in today? 641-1010 is the number. We'll hear from Gus Bradley. Also, we've got a, I don't know who, kind of mystery guest today coming in about 30 minutes. We're going to have a Jaguar player in here with us. We don't know who it is at this point in time. We'll see who that turns out to be. Jeff Loggeman will join us. We'll look at the film through Jeff's eyes, at least. Was it as bad as it appeared, or were there some bright spots? Put it this way, the list of bright spots, don't expect it to be much longer.
Well, I got a bright spot for you.
What do you got?
I talked about this a little bit last night. The Jags, a team that had 31 sacks for an entire season last year, have 8 through 2 games.
That is a bright spot.
They are tied for second in the league. It's not difficult to figure out who's first. They got 10 on Sunday.
Yes.
But they are tied for second in the league, and I was like, hey, 8 sacks, that's pretty darn good for this Jaguar team. And then I thought, well, they've been on the field for 180 snaps
that's
in two games.
Point.
I mean, they have been on the field a ton defensively.
I don't think, though, that that's necessarily reflective of that as much, because they had the 5 sacks in the first half against Philly, and
they
was more in the normal flow of a game. You know, I didn't think that was because they're playing in a seemingly high amount of snaps or what have you. But
no.
Regardless, Tony, they're on pace. Last year, Carolina led the league, I want to say, with around 62, 64 sacks. That's what the Jags are on pace for.
Right around there, yeah.
Right now. I mean, so that's, you're right. That is a bright spot. That's a tremendous improvement from what we've seen over recent years. But it's got to be more than fits and starts. You know, 5 of them come in that first half. And the ones in this game, there were a consequence. Every sack can be consequential, but you didn't have the consistent pressure this week nearly as much as you had in week one. You're going to need it. You can't let Andrew Luck sit back there and survey the field.
No, they got 1 sack in that game Sunday where the game was still up in the air. I mean, they had the 2 sacks in the second half that it was like, whatever. They brought a blitz. They got home. Good for them. You know,
maybe it
shows that you can go get some pressure. But you had the one early in the game, Ryan Davis got Archie.
Right. And then Wincy Guy, though, didn't that kind of take him out of field goal range at the end of the first half?
Might have.
I think it
did. I don't remember.
Because that set up the fourth down play, I think, where they ended up trying in the Hail Mary. So I'd say, yeah, 2 impactful plays in the pass rush. But regardless, the total looks good. That just goes to show you. Can stats be deceiving? Well, the facts are they've sacked quarterbacks 8 times through 2 games, which is definitely an improvement over recent years. We're looking for bright spots. We are looking for silver linings. They're not that forthcoming right now. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you to tweet us or post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page your new predicted order of finish in the AFC South. You've had a couple of weeks to digest what things look like. Do you believe in the Texans? Are they the best team in the division? Are the Jags destined for the basement, or can they turn this thing around? You can weigh in on Twitter at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Lauren. Jeff Loggeman will be along, still in the principal's office right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll get some scoop. What do you think?
I doubt it.
I doubt it, too. I think more Jeff is getting a paddling right now, which you got to be careful. If you're Gus Bradley in today's climate in the National Football League.
Yeah, you better watch your back.
Absolutely. All right. Coming up, we'll hear from Gus some of his comments yesterday. Also, mystery guest coming up in about 20, 25 minutes. And Jeff Loggeman will join us to look back on the film review from week 2 in the National Football League. You want to get on board? 641-1010 is the way to do it. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey folks, Mike Dempsey here. Week 3 of the NFL season's upon us. You know what? I'm having a heck of a start to my fantasy season, but look at all the folks that got injured this week. AJ Green, Knowshon Moreno, Mark Ingram. The list goes on and on. Guys that maybe you were counting on early in the season, well, if you drafted them, your season may be done. Not with FanDuel.com. FanDuel.com, you just put those guys to the side. You pick a whole new lineup every single week. It's weekly fantasy football for real cash. Joe Watson from New York turned a $50 deposit last year into over $30,000 in less than 2 weeks playing fantasy football on FanDuel last season. The next one, well, that could be you. Go to FanDuel.com, click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, enter my first name, Mike, and when you do, if you're a first-time user, they'll match your initial deposit dollar for dollar up to $200. That's free money in your account. The only way to do it, click on the microphone, enter my name, Mike, at FanDuel.com. Don't let these injuries get you down. Weekly fantasy football, the way to go, and the place to play is FanDuel.com.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, if you bleed teal and black, then welcome home. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Lagerman here with you. Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. We've got the home opener coming up this week. Just got this email as a season ticket holder, and I'm sure everyone else is a season ticket holder, got the same one. Solo seats are available on a first-come, first-serve basis. You have until 5 o'clock on Friday to purchase them. $19 a seat. If you're a season ticket holder already and you want additional tickets for your friends for the home opener against Indianapolis, call 633-2000, and you can get those additional seats for just $19, just call 633-2000. It's option one on the menu. And check that out. Oh, likewise, if you're not a season ticket holder, tickets still available as they invite you to come out and protect the bank this weekend. Jeff Lagerman is here. You get a paddling? What happened in the principal's office there?
just a little catching up. A little catching up with
all
the
right.
head coach.
Yeah,
we usually do that on Tuesday because we do part of the Gus Bradley show, which airs Saturday nights and Sunday mornings, and so we usually get a little catch-up time on Tuesdays.
You ever have corporal punishment in school? You ever get called to the principal's office?
No, I didn't need it at school because my dad had a very nice-sized belt.
Did he?
Yeah. And a bar of soap.
I got it in a sock?
No.
You're washing out your mouth.
Yeah. For the
blanket party, Tony, at the Lagerman house.
That was, in fact, what was the bar? So wasn't that Few Good Men?
The blanket party, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was. They gave him a blanket party and a Few Good Men.
Yeah,
right?
Full Metal Jacket.
No.
But wasn't it both, though?
It might have been in both.
I think it was both, but I don't think they actually showed the one in a Few Good Men.
Right,
because it kind of already happened.
Right, it had happened,
they
and
definitely
he ended
gave
up
it to
choking
pile.
Because they had shoved the rag in his mouth.
Interesting little tidbit about a Few Good Men. I mean, we know Jack Nicholson is one of the greatest actors of all time.
I would agree, okay.
And we know that Tom Cruise is a total flake, in my opinion.
Makes good movies, though.
He makes great movies. In fact, one of his movies influenced my brother's life in a huge way. My brother was a graduate of the University of Virginia, watched and went and saw the movie Top Gun, and quit his job as an aerospace engineer and joined
beach volleyball
and joined the Air Force to fly jets. But in that movie, A Few Good Men, you remember, I think it was Lieutenant or Private Harold Dawson.
Okay, yeah, Dawson and Downey.
Okay,
right.
Dawson was my college roommate at Virginia.
The actor who played Dawson.
That's correct.
In the movie, okay.
Brian Wolfgang Bodison, who played safety for us at the University of Virginia. And an interesting story of how he got that job. He was an art major at Virginia, and when he graduated, he decided he was going to move to California and ended up taking a job in the mailroom of Rob Reiner, I think is the producer of that movie. Took a job in the mailroom with Rob's office, and Rob was passing him in the hallway one day and says, "Hey, Wolf, you ever do any acting?" And he's like, "Nah, man, I've never done that." And so Brian Wolf, Wolfgang Bodison, said I would love to read for it, and they did it, and that's how he got his acting career started.
No, Rob, I've always aspired to work in your mailroom, though, and here I am.
But he was never
that's
going
cool
out there
story.
To be. It's a cool story.
No, that's a very cool story. You know,
in fact, the two brushes with Hollywood that I had in college, Brian Wolfgang Bodison was one of them, and one of my other roommates. You know, at Virginia, you know, you had athletic housing that we had in blocks, you know, University Heights is where we stayed at. You could stay in on the grounds on university housing like regular students, or you could choose to where they had a block of rooms on a little place off campus. And one year I roomed with a guy by the name of Roy, and Roy Brown was an offensive guard for us and starting guard. Very good. And his dad was a senator from Ohio. Roy's brother was Clancy Brown, who was, and if you search or Google Clancy Brown, do that for me real quick, because he was in a number of movies. You remember the Sean Penn movie where he was in jail and he had the boombox up to his ear and it blew up in his ear? I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember that one, no.
But Clancy Brown was a huge actor in Hollywood, and Roy's brother was Clancy, and Clancy used to come to the Virginia games. I mean, Virginia was like a who's who celebrity, because we had Yusef Jackson, who was the son of Jesse Jackson. We had Calvin Pete's son on the team, who was a punter for us. We had Brian Greasy, son of Bob Greasy, on the football team. So it was pretty cool to be at Virginia. You know, you were around guys and people that, you know, a lot of people were recognized pretty quickly.
Clancy Brown's brother, the guard, what was his first name again?
Roy Brown.
Roy Brown.
Mm-hmm.
How old is he right now?
Same age as me, probably 47.
Bring him in. Let's go. We need him right now.
I think he's actually in politics. He followed in his dad's footsteps. Did not follow in his brother's footsteps to Hollywood. I can tell you one thing. He had the face of a guard.
Well, they have character roles in Hollywood, too. So.
But Clancy Brown was in a number of movies.
Yeah, he's been in 74, according to IMDb.
How about that?
Oh, yeah. You got the names of some of them?
Just trying to pull it up now. I know he was in the remake
Highlander,
of Nightmare on
the Highlander.
Street.
Oh, I love Highlander.
That was him. He was the big stud in Highlander.
He was Highlander? He was like the main...
He was the big warrior.
The main bad guy?
Yeah, that was him. That's Clancy Brown.
That's Clancy. Okay.
Yep.
All right, now, well, yeah, that's a crazy looking dude.
Yeah,
right there.
He was the movie in the jail where you remember the things came out of the guy's mouth. The guy was on.
The Green Mile.
Green Mile.
Yeah.
You remember the guard?
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
The guard in another. Anyway. Probably get the whole list of my
people are wondering right now, was the film that bad that we're just gonna spend 5 minutes on Clancy Brown? The answer, yes.
But it was cool. I mean, at Virginia, I mean,
is cool.
Yeah.
Let's a little trivia on this subject and we'll get back to it. Tom Cruise's first movie role that I'm aware of, at least. I believe it was his debut.
Which one?
Do you know what it was?
No, I have no idea.
Taps. You ever see Taps?
Yes.
Remember, he was the guy with the shaved head.
Yep.
Kind of went cuckoo.
Yep.
At the military school. That was a great movie. Love
yeah,
Taps.
He's a heck of an actor, but he is.
He's total cuckoo. He's cuckoo.
Yeah, he's cuckoo.
But he makes entertaining movies.
Yeah,
no
he does.
About
he does a good job.
All he's right.
A really good career. Shawshank, Dead Man Walking.
That's what it is. Shawshank.
Clancy.
Yep.
Starship Troopers.
He was the guard in Shawshank.
Okay.
Yep.
So he wasn't in Green Mile then.
Was it? I don't think it was Green Mile.
No,
it was Shawshank. It was
The Hurricane. He's been in a lot.
Yeah.
There you go. Good for Clancy.
Good guy. There he is right there. In fact, Jaguars executive producer of radio pulled up a picture of Clancy Brown, and he looks like a big offensive lineman, doesn't he? He got the big goatee working.
All right, let's get to it.
He got that
man.
From me, by the way.
Clancy Brown's got his own film to worry about. We got Jag film to concern ourselves with here. Let's start with the O-line, because that's really, to me, the bread and butter, what I want to talk to you about every week.
You want to start with the positives?
Yes.
Okay. The positives were is that Brandon Linder had probably as tough of a matchup as you could get Jason Hatcher at times. Jason Hatcher is one of the best pass-rushing defensive tackles in the league, and he fared pretty well. He ended up giving up a sack to Ryan Kerrigan, who dropped down in the three technique in the Redskins' lightning-type package that the Jaguars run. But overall, he was probably the best offensive lineman out there. I thought that Luke Bowanko improved the offensive line when he was inserted into the lineup. I expect him to be the starter going forward. He's just more athletic than Jock McLennan, and I like Jock. I think Jock has great value as a swing guy, whether it be a center or left guard or right guard. I think he's an excellent sixth or seventh guy on game day. Sam Young, who I said that I thought might have a chance of starting opening day, played very well. He actually matched the power of Ryan Kerrigan. I expect him to be the starter this week because Cam Bradford, I thought, had a horrendous game, a very difficult game.
You and I talked about this a moment
and
ago.
On top of that, the injury to Mercedes Lewis was a result of Cam Bradfield. And I will show that on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com this week.
A quick explanation. What do you mean by that?
It goes up to the second level to attack the linebacker. And when you go up to the second level to attack a linebacker, attack it with force. Drop your pad level so you can get some momentum. Comes in high, engages, and the linebacker was Keenan Robinson, who's a good young player from Texas, got great speed. and he ends up driving Cam Bradfield back about 4 yards, and Mercedes is doing a great job blocking his guy, and Cam gets, you know, basically dumped on the back legs of Mercedes Lewis. I mean, that's, you know, if you're more physical, then you're not losing one of the veteran guys that you have in your starting on your offense.
You don't expect Austin Pastor to be back this week, all right?
That's a lot to ask. I mean, look, if Tony Boselli has to play with a club, I'm not worried about it.
Because
he's got great feet.
Yeah.
Austin's game is power, mauler, upper body strength. Feet is not his greatest attribute.
His hands on you.
He's a blue-collar right tackle. And to ask an offensive tackle to play back without having a lot of reps yet, because I don't believe he's practiced yet, to ask him to practice starting on a Wednesday with a club and then to be able to play on Sunday is a lot to ask. I expect Sam Young to be in the lineup.
All right, so let's say Pastor's back in the next few weeks at some point, right? And let's say he's immediately inserted back in the starting lineup. Well, Sam Young, as you've talked about, is only a right tackle. Cam Bradfield is your swing tackle. But as poorly as he's played, do you have an alternative? What do
Josh
you do?
Wells?
Because okay, is that would you Jeff Logman, feel comfortable moving forward and saying Wells is my primary guy if something happens to Luke?
Well, he's a backup. I mean, so you cross your fingers and go, don't get hurt, don't get hurt, don't get hurt anybody, please. You know, but if he has to play, you know, he's got the higher ceiling than a Cam Bradfield. I mean, my
point is, in a couple of weeks, is Cam Bradfield going to be on this roster?
I don't know that.
Okay.
That's a great question.
You talked about, you went right to the positive, which is interesting because we looked at Pro Football
Focus. Got a lot of
yesterday.
Offensive linemen on the roster now.
Understood.
You know, you need to get a tight end.
Right.
Need to get a tight end.
They may have Clay Harbor coming back, by the way. They're hoping to have him practice tomorrow. So that would be a big boost.
It would
at
be
least
a huge
in the passing
boost.
Game.
Clay Harbor's a heck of a football player now.
Right. Not necessarily, the most physical guy.
No.
In terms of blocking.
No, he is too.
Is he?
Absolutely. In fact, before he hurt his ankle in training camp, one of the great matchups to watch was watching Clay Harbor against Red Bryant. I mean, they almost went at it fisticuffs a couple times.
They did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good stuff.
I think Clay was smart to defuse that situation.
The Philadelphia Eagles, look, I mean, they had, you know, Brent Celek and Zach Ertz. I mean, so you get why they ended up letting a guy like Clay Harbor go. But a tight end that has vertical threatening speed and is a physical player, it's not very often you find a guy like that on waivers. That was a great pickup.
All right, we'll talk about what wasn't so good with the offensive line coming up. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman here, Jaguars. Hey, let's say hello to Dakota Watson popping into the JOI studios, Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. What's up, man? How are you?
Doing well. How about y'all?
We're good. Good. We haven't seen a whole lot of you.
Yeah.
You know, you're just, where are you right now physically? Do you feel like are you still working your way to where you want to be, or are you kind of beyond all that and you feel okay?
It's not definitely where I want to be. I'm definitely working on that, trying to get loosened up and get this tightness out the way. But at the same time, I'm a lot better than what I was.
You look at over the course of the summer, you missed a lot of reps.
Right.
How much were you able to pick up from what they wanted you to do? This new position has basically been created this year here, the auto linebacker position. They signed you with that position in mind.
Right.
Were you able to, you know, get, obviously you're watching film, you're in the meetings, you're doing all those things, but are you able to pick up enough without getting those on-field reps to really feel comfortable in what the role is that they have for you?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it really starts in the classroom, and I've been doing a lot in the film room, meeting with the coaches, and definitely looking at the reps outside. Even if I'm not in, I'm definitely trying to get the mental reps in. It's better than nothing. I mean, of course you want to get them physical reps, but at the same time, I got to do what I got to do. And I've definitely been in the film room and in the books.
You're probably tired of mental reps.
Oh, without a doubt.
I mean,
without a doubt.
Wow. You're ready to actually put the mental aspect to work.
Right. And it's nothing like the physical reps, but at the same time, we got to take it one step at a time. And that's what we've been doing. I've just been patient. And like I said, when my number's called, it'll be called, and I'll be ready to go.
Where's your game at right now? I mean, you know, if you had to put it on, because I remember when the Jaguars signed you, I think I said it to you, Mike. I said, I think the one acquisition that nobody is going to talk about that might be one of the best in the offseason is the signing of you, because I had a chance to watch your film when you were playing at Tampa in a backup role, but you got snaps on defense.
Right.
And so I was excited about watching. Where are you physically? If you had to put a number on it, you know, 80%, 75%, 90%, what would it be?
I feel like I'm about 95 to 100. I'm going to be honest with you. We just don't know at this point in time because we haven't went all out just yet. I've got like, 20 reps this past game, and I feel like that's still not enough to be able to tell me exactly where I want to be. Now, as far as the, you know, if you want to look at the special team aspect of it, and me running down the field full speed and things like that, oh, man. I mean, I feel like I'm 100% on that. But at the same time, as far as the conditioning level and as far as how the muscles react and everything like that, we'll definitely have to see.
The conditioning is the hardest to get, isn't it, coming back from a rehab because, you know, all off season you're rehabbing. You can't condition to get ready for a game. That's the hardest, isn't it?
Yes, sir. And it's just also that mental aspect of it, too, is just because you think you're ready, you think you're good, and you know where you was at one point in time, but then once you have to start all back over from scratch, it's kind of like I'm in high school again. So it's like you got to really be patient for it. And when your number is called, you got to be ready to go.
Dakota Watson here with us on Jaguars Today. Dakota, obviously no team thinks they're going to start 0-2. No team obviously wants to start 0-2. How difficult or easy is it to compartmentalize as a pro? You just got to forget what's behind you. You got to learn from it, but you can't dwell on it because the next game comes upon you so quickly.
Right. You just got to – that's part about being a pro. You just definitely going to have to worry about what's coming up. You know, we make our mistakes. We're going to have to capitalize on it. But one thing that I can say is with the head coach, Coach Gus Bradley, he's definitely coming in with a great attitude, and that carries over. And we're not going to sit here and taking it lightly as with the losses and everything like that, but we build from it. It's about getting better. And that's what being a pro is. You learn from it and continue to move forward.
Did you look in the mirror this week?
Oh, I had to.
Yeah.
I had to, definitely. And I mean, I look in the mirror every day. Like,
well, I'm not talking about, personal growth.
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's covered. I know I'm good on that aspect.
I want to make sure the listeners understand that.
No. But as far as what I need to do to get better, what can I do to contribute to the team, I've definitely been doing that with myself.
Everybody, and that's kind of what everybody talked about, you can't make Red Bryant better. You can all collectively make each other better. But you know what I mean? You can only improve your own play.
Right.
Everybody else has got to be responsible for their stuff.
Right.
Watching the film yesterday, do you guys feel – are you sick at looking at it saying, man, we know – that if we are playing our assignments the proper way, or if we're doing this, is it correctable stuff? Because people look at it and say, man, what do we take positive out of this game? What can you take out of that game and say, okay, these are the things we can fix, we can work on, and turn around quickly?
A lot of the things that happened were mistakes that we've done. It's things that we were not fitting in properly, things where we're not, you know, doing our assignment right. It's things that we're able to control that we didn't control. It's a lot of things that mistakes that we brought upon ourselves. So that's what really is frustrating, but at the same time are fixable amongst us.
What does that do to, though? I mean, is it the fact that you've got so many guys that are new to each other playing together? There is some youth on that side of the ball, but there's a lot of veterans over there as well. But is it just a matter of time yet need to play enough games together to kind of have that become second nature? What is it?
I just feel like we just need to be more detailed in our work. We have to be more detailed in our work. Come together. I mean, and when I say come together, it's not even an aspect of, us, it's like, us doing individual work or anything like that. It's just basically bringing everything in, all our talents together, being detailed in our assignments, knowing what we need to be and do what we need to do when we need to do it.
How do you guys react in a game like Washington where you're on the field for 50-something snaps.
Mm-hmm.
The offense is on the field for maybe 15 at that point. The offense has 1 yard. Is it deflating to the defense at times when the productivity is not there on the other side of the ball?
I mean, it's definitely it's frustrating at times, but at the same time, this is what we signed up for. We know this is our job, and I don't care what the situation may be. We are here for a reason, and that's to defend the ball. We need to make sure that we keep out the end zone. So whatever the case is, we have to do our job. Offense got to do their job. Special teams got to do their job. It's a collective thing. So when everybody clicks and come together, it'll make things a lot easier.
And to kind of follow up with that, I mean, special teams, you're a big part of that. You're a core four guy.
Right.
Which, core four guy for people that are listening means, kickoff return, punt, and punt return. You're pretty much on all of them, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
When you're a core four guy, taking pride in the performance of the special teams is key.
Right.
The last two games, punt returns have hurt.
Yes.
That's something I'm sure that you and Mike Mallory, the special teams coach, and the core four guys are saying, hey, we got to be better.
Right, most definitely. And it's like I said, it's a lot of things that I feel like I have to do to be able to cover a great chunk of them yards that was carried. I mean, shoot, I take personal responsibility as far as that long run. I should have been outside as far as, in my position to keep that cup. And I'm not afraid to say that, but at the same time, those are the things that we are able to control, and I will get better at.
I was bringing that up because I wanted to see if he was going to go there.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to say it. I'm a man about mine.
I watched the film. Yes. And you got inside, real inside on that long return.
Exactly. Yep. And I told the team that.
They're clearly, after a game like that, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's everybody can point to themselves and look at the areas where they could improve. What is the kind of general feeling, the mood of the team right now? You come off a loss like that. You're not happy to be 0-2, clearly. Right. But it's 14 games left in the season, and no one's running away with it after 2 weeks.
Oh, without a doubt. That's the thing about it. We reflected on what we need to reflect it on, what we needed to reflect on as far as the loss and everything. But now we got the new week coming up. We got to worry about what we got to do this week. And we just keep our heads up. We just need to just keep moving. And like I say, be more detailed in our work, and it'll pay off in the long run.
It'll feel so much different. I mean, you beat the Colts. The Colts will be 0-3.
Right.
If that and if Houston loses, you're a game out of the division lead. The difference getting that first win has got to be dramatic, when you start out the season with a loss or two.
Right, but like I said, the most important game is this game that's coming up. So everything else we can't control, but we can't control what's coming up right now.
All right, so a lot of fans talking about the quarterback.
Okay.
You came from Tampa.
Okay.
The debate was raging in Tampa when you were there last year about the quarterback.
Right.
Does that debate go on in the locker room?
I'm going to be honest with you, no. Like I say, we are a team, and we're not going to sit here and try to point any fingers or try to put each other down or anything like that, because, like I say, if we have people outside trying to come inside to try to control our team, then what's the team? We have what we have in our four walls, and like I say, whatever goes on in the locker room stays in the locker room. That's not anybody else's business.
Dakota Watson, good luck this week,
yes, sir.
Man.
Thank you.
I mean, whether it's the core four. I learned a few things from this guy. Core four are just getting out there and making some plays in the auto, man. No matter how you get it, I'm sure you don't care. 41-40, 10-3, it's all good. Get that win this week.
Yes, sir, most definitely.
Really quick, before we let you go, Dakota, we know you're the comic book guy in the locker room. All right, what did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy? And last time you were in here with us, you sang the theme song to SpongeBob SquarePants. So do you have another cartoon theme song for us this week?
A cartoon theme song, man. I'm gonna be honest with you. I watched Cat Dog the other day.
Oh yeah.
And to this day, I still don't know
Cat Dog.
Yeah, but
yeah.
And Cat Dog. I don't know what they be saying.
I have no idea what the words are. That thing.
All right. So, as a kid growing up, what was your favorite cartoon?
My favorite cartoon kid growing up, Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. It was running.
Mine was Superheroes.
Yeah.
That was old school.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
Yeah,
was,
I'm
aging
myself there. Yeah,
I remember you singing SpongeBob last time. Who's SpongeBob's boss in the cartoon?
Mr. Krabs.
Voice of Mr. Krabs?
Who can do it?
Clancy Brown.
No way.
Oh, that's all together. I know that. This is amazing.
Get out of town.
We're just talking about this actor, Clancy Brown.
I brought that up because Clancy Brown's an actor who's been in, 75 movies?
Yeah.
And Clancy Brown's brother and I were roommates at Virginia,
really?
Playing on Virginia football team, yeah.
Oh,
that's
man.
Pretty wild. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
crazy.
Jeff,
I knew that.
I can introduce you to Mr. Krabs.
Yeah, crazy. Say, you just might get an autograph from him.
So, Guardians of the Galaxy, thumbs up, thumbs down, somewhere in the middle?
I think the expectation was so high for me when I walked into the theater, and I wasn't.
I thought it was a little too salty to bring my 10-year-old to. I'll be
that's
honest.
Tricky.
I'm not a prude, but my goodness, I thought that was a little over the top for, consider how many kids were going to be in the audience.
Right, right. I wasn't really a big fan of it, to be honest with you.
There you go. Kind of a thumb sideways.
All right, so last question. Best cartoon movie that's come out in the last 10 years? Not me. I'm a big fan of Toy Story and Shrek.
I think Dakota's an Avengers guy.
Yeah, I can say that. I can definitely say that. Avengers was a good one. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a good one, too.
Yeah, the guy that came up with that was actually a member of the East Coast Surfing Club.
What?
Yep. Hmm. From our area of Florida here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is why they talk like surfers.
Was that based in St. Augustine?
I don't know exactly where it's based out of, but the guy that was the one who came up with that idea was in the East Coast Surfers. And that was kind of, you had West Coast and East Coast, just like you do in music and everything else. You got East Coast, West, hell, even football. You got West Coast offense and East Coast offense.
You don't know what's going to go on when you come in here, Dakota. So thank you for taking the risk and joining us today on Jaguars Day. Seriously, man, go out there and hopefully everybody plays better this week. Get a W, and we'll all feel better about
it. Yes, sir, most definitely. I agree.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, thank you.
There he goes. Dakota Watson here with us. We got to take a break. A little behind. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony with you on Jaguars Today. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I'm Paul Posluszny, and you're listening to the best Jaguars coverage in Jacksonville on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, thanks to Dakota Watson for joining us on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat, inviting you to come out and protect the bank. Home opener this week, put the ugly 0-2 behind you, Jaguar fans. 633-2000, the number, or go to jaguars.com/tickets. And if you're a season ticket holder, you can purchase unsold single seats for $19 this week. But you got to act quick. 633-2000 to come out and protect the bank for the home opener. Jags taking on the Colts here in week three of the National Football League season. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars Today. Even Fortunato got in on the act there. It's been an interesting show so far.
That was strong.
That really tied the room together, didn't it? That was nice.
I never knew that.
Nicely done, Joe Fortunato. You just took a bow in the hallway. All right. You started with what you thought was the good or the solid offensively with the line.
Yeah, and I thought Allen Robinson, I'm sure he had mental busts. But just, you got to see a glimpse of why they drafted him. To me, that's a positive.
Yeah, and Grant, and that's the one thing I pointed to in the postgame is maybe the only positive, you know, in defeat, there's nothing that stands out over that, but Allen Robinson made a few plays.
Well, I said this, and I'm sticking with it. I said that once I got a chance to lay my eyes on the film of those guys in college, once I got to see what little I did of Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee together in training camp, I think Allen Robinson has the higher ceiling.
I tend to agree, but I'm glad that you have that opinion because that means I can trust my eyeballs on that one as well.
Trust your eyes.
Your eyeballs, you didn't mention the left side of the offensive line.
Who was on the radio last night at 8 o'clock?
Tony.
Me.
And somebody was saying that the right side was a problem and the left side was okay.
Did I say they were okay? Uh-oh. I said they weren't as bad as the right side.
I happened to catch that.
Oh, did you?
On my way home, and I'm just sitting there going, Tony, you should wait until
Tuesday.
That's
why you wait until the film comes in. So,
what'd you see?
Went good. I mean, Luke Jokel got the quarterback hit a couple times, got him sacked. He got beat by the rookie, Trent Murphy, a second-round pick, clean inside, and got Chad drilled right in the stomach. He's got to be better. I mean, and the disappointment in Luke in that game is because you know athletically he is extremely gifted and he's capable of better. He's got to be better. And I think that
what can he do to improve?
You know, once you get to the National Football League in this level, you can be the most gifted guy in the world, but you have to learn the intricacies of playing the position, sets, discipline, fundamentals. I mean, that's what the game is. Now, you can sit there and talk about, you know, well, Tony Boselli was the greatest athlete in the world. And he was a great athlete. He wasn't the greatest athlete. Tony was great because Tony paid attention to all the details. Tony knew how to set guys. Tony knew how to approach guys. You know, he took it to another level. Anthony Munoz. Anthony Munoz, when I faced Anthony Munoz in my first career start ever at defensive end, I thought I knew him. I thought I could beat him, and I did beat him a couple times, but the savvy that he played with shut me down. Almost dislocated my elbow in the first career game I ever played at defensive end because he leg-whipped me because he was prepared for it. You know, Luke Jokel has to have discipline in his sets. He has to have discipline in his hands to be able to combat right-end rushers. I mean, those are the premier guys in the National Football League, and I think he needs to be a lot better. He needs to be a lot more physical. Especially in the running game.
Are they missing George Yarno's presence with this offensive line?
Well, I think
you
always miss, you know, the presence of a veteran offensive line coach, but I think Luke Butkus is a fantastic coach. You know, and
so it's not directly necessarily attributable to
No. I don't think it's attributed to that. I think it's attributed to what is this this week will be game 4 for Luke Jokel
playing left tackle.
Left tackle, and really it's only game 3 because he got hurt in St. Louis
right,
and remember that was one game over a year ago, you know. So, You know, he's still young. He's still raw. He's no different than a high draft pick Robinson in St. Louis or the kid in Atlanta right now. I mean, there's no difference. I mean, he's a rookie. He's still a rookie. You know, so he's got to be
Beatles?
Better. Beatles has got to be better. He's got to be more physical. You know, when you've got an offensive line that everybody for the most part is brand new, you have to have something that you can count on. And I kind of said this going into the season. At every position group, you got to have somebody that you can count on. You got to have Zane Beatles that can be the rock, the foundation along the offensive line. You have to have Cecil Shorts at the wide receiver position, the solid rock foundation. Mercedes Lewis at tight end. And even though Toby is really a first-year starter, he's been around long enough to know that you expect him to be a foundation. The problem is that now you got Mercedes Lewis who's been hurt. Cecil's been hurt. So you're not going to have that going forward. And then Zane Beatles hasn't been the rock solid foundation that you would expect out of the offensive line. He's got to be better. He's got to be more physical, and he's capable of that. I mean, he was a Pro Bowler 2 years ago.
The Eagles really hurt the Colts throwing the ball to their backs out of the backfield. Now, they've got a couple of dynamic guys. We understand that, but particularly Darren Sproles. Tony and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday and this morning as well. If you're getting crushed with the pass rush, isn't one of the most effective ways to slow that down to throw some, you know, passes right over their heads to the back circle and out of the backfield?
Yeah.
Didn't seem like the Jags really even try to implement that until maybe the last drive or so of the game.
Well, I think that what they were concerned about first and foremost with Washington was blocking that front. You know, you saw a lot of plays in which they only had three-man routes. So they were keeping the back and the tight end in on drop-back passes just because Ryan Kerrigan, Arakpo, Jason Hatcher up in the middle, and Jim Haslett bring in six guys or five guys nearly every time. And when you're and looking at the sacks, 10 sacks in the game, and I did this last night on Jaguars All Access, 10 sacks in the game, 5 sacks were 3rd and 9+. 3rd and 9+, 5 of them, okay? And then you had another 2 or 3 that were 2nd and 10+.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, a couple of highlights on what happened on this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. The Cleveland Rams, formerly of the All-American Football Conference, mm-hmm. played their first NFL game, beating Philadelphia 35-10 back in 1950. This date in 1973, Buffalo Bill O.J. Simpson went for 250 yards and a couple of scores as the Bills beat the Patriots 31-13. That was the year O.J. would become the first guy to break the 2,000-yard barrier with 2,003 rushing yards. Whatever happened to
that guy? He was not
guy?
Wearing gloves in that game.
Was he not? No. Go without gloves? That's become a new thing, more or less, yeah. To wear the gloves. What happened to that guy? Anyway, you don't hear much from him these days. O.J. Rushed for 250 on this day. And Chester McLaughlin. Not many high-profile NFL players born, apparently, on September 16th. He was born in 1969. You said, Jeff, one of the more athletically gifted defensive linemen.
Unbelievable.
Who did fulfill his athletic potential.
He had every skill set you could ever ask for. I mean, I'm talking like Jerome Brown, Reggie White skill set. But Chester was not a self-motivator, not a self-starter, not a guy that was committed in the offseason. If he was, he would have been one of the greatest ever. Hall of Famer.
All right, this state football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, featuring the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard. Whether you're in the market for a family dentist or you need cosmetic work done, call Dr. McCall at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
As often happens with these kind of things, the dirt is being dug up on Adrian Peterson. A report has surfaced that AP had another one of his children file a report with Child Protective Services a year ago. The report included a picture of the child with a cut over his right eye that has since turned into a scar. Again, reportedly, no charges were brought in that incident, however. Peterson has been reinstated by the Minnesota Vikings and is expected to play for the team this weekend when they travel. Take on the New Orleans Saints. John Abraham, the NFL's active sacks leader, was not in the lineup for the Arizona Cardinals against the Giants on Sunday after suffering a concussion in Week 1. Abraham had stepped away for a week to reportedly consider retirement, but according to his head coach, Bruce Arians. He will rejoin the team this week. And, hey, Jeff, do you remember last week when you were here on Tuesday and reports were that the union and league were close to finalizing a new drug policy?
I do.
Guess what today's reports indicate about a week later in that process?
That it's not done yet.
The same thing. You got it. Two sides reportedly close again, I think, for the eighth day in a row.
I think I said that last week.
You did. You said it'd be 4 or 6 weeks before
it'd be a while.
Done.
Yeah. I need Wes Welker back, all right? Can you give me Wes Welker back, please, and just be done with it, with this nonsense?
It's collective bargaining. I mean, that takes time. Just the way it is.
We're not patient. Fantasy owners are not patient, Jeff.
We need
our players back in the lineup right now. All right, let's talk about the quarterback. Okay?
Let's do it.
Talked about the offensive line. Overall, I'm not going to steer you in any direction. Overall, how did Chet Henne play?
Not great. I don't think he had any help. You know, but I've always said this about Chad. I think Chad is a good, solid football player, but I don't know if Chad makes those around him a lot better. Now, when you have an offensive line that didn't play very well, in fact, played like a sieve, and you had a very young wide receiving core that had as many mental errors as reportedly they had, that's difficult for anybody to have success. And I don't think the quarterback would have made a difference in that ball game, but I still have this belief, and that, you know, from what I saw in Blake Bortles, he makes people around him better, whether it be because of his pocket presence, his escapability, his willingness to take shots as a quarterback. And those are things that, you know, you don't have with Chad. And so I said this yesterday with JP Shadrick on Inside the Jaguars on Jaguars.com, that if you're so young everywhere on the offense, there's two modes of thought. One is put him in there and let him grow. But do you trust that his mental makeup will allow him to go through that process and come out on the other side and still be the same mental aspect that he has? I kind of look at that from my perspective. You know, you remember when I was drafted. I mean, I was criticized. That was doubted. I didn't care what anybody said. I was going to be what I was going to be. I was never a great player. I thought I was a good player. That didn't change me. But with quarterbacks, sometimes that can impact them in a great way to where they never are the same. Now, is that the case, or was just their makeup at the very beginning of the process? You don't know the answer to that. And I think what Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell and Shad Khan are trying to do is to make sure that they make the right decision for the next decade. They know that Blake Bortles is the future. They know that he is going to be a quarterback that's going to be exceptionally good. They believe that. But do you want to risk putting him in when so many components of the offense are not even close to being solid yet, and risk him having no success and maybe it impacting him down the road? I get that.
Let me act as a constituent of the Play the Kid organization, all right, the unofficial organization out there. Let me act on their behalf here and ask some of the questions that they ask me, and I think you're a good guy to answer these. A, is it ever going to be perfect, right? I mean, it's because if you wait for all these pieces to be in place,
it's never going to be perfect, but it can be better.
Okay. So
where you're not having 10 sacks in a game and 12 mental errors by your wide receiver group.
But I've heard you on the broadcast, you and Tony, saying, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm going too far, you'd play him.
I'd play him.
All right. So you're okay. You think, despite the state of the offensive line, whatever, based on your knowledge of Blake, his makeup, what they've talked about, that's one of the strongest things they like about him, by the way, is his makeup and his mental toughness.
His demeanor. And that's why I'd play him. And I don't know if you're old enough at this time. But when I was in New York, we had Kenny O'Brien, mm-hmm. and then we went and drafted with our first-round pick that year because we had used a supplemental pick on Rob Moore. We went and drafted Brownie Nagel in the second round.
He thinks I'm not old enough to remember Brownie Nagel.
Okay.
God bless you, Jeff Loggeman.
just checking. Okay, and Kenny O'Brien's contract was up in Brownie's second year, so they made it a protracted holdout so that it would allow Brownie Nagel to get the reps in training camp. The locker room knew that Brownie Nagel wasn't ready. Just mentally, he wasn't ready. You know, Kenny O'Brien, we knew, was a guy that was never going to take us to the promised land. But we knew that Kenny O'Brien gave us the best chance to win. So the locker room wasn't on board with it. I think this locker room is different when it comes to Blake Bortles. Because every time you ask them about Blake Bortles, what's the first reaction you get? A smile on the face of the guy that's being asked the question, and they want to talk about his demeanor. That, to me, tells me that the locker room would be on board with making a switch.
Do you think that's the mood of the locker room, though? I mean, you asked Dakota Watson that question.
And he said exactly what he needed to say. You know, and we had to ask that question. But a locker room is no different than a sports bar having a conversation about who should start a quarterback. That happens. It happened in our locker room. It happened in our locker room here in 1995 when we had Steve Berline and Mark Brunell. It happens. It's human nature. It's your football team, and you care about your football team, and you care who plays quarterback one way or the other.
Let me ask a point-blank question. Who gives the Jags, in your opinion, Jeff Logman's opinion, who gives them a better chance to win this upcoming Sunday, Blake Bortles, Chad Henne?
To me, I think it's even. I still believe that Blake makes certain situations better, but I still believe that Chad Henne has the veteran savvy that it's equal. But now I'm looking past this game.
Understood.
You know, I'm looking, okay, in 2 weeks and 3 weeks and 4 weeks, who's going to be able to make them better overall?
I guess my point being here, do you think, and there's no way of knowing because everyone's going to have their own different opinion. We heard Mercedes Lewis endorse Chad Henne remain.
They're all going to say that. And you know what? If it was flipped, if Blake was the starter,
they'd back him.
They would back him. That's what you have to do in that locker room.
If the Jags go out there, and I'll give Henne credit for not turning the ball over. Right, that's one thing because
it hasn't done it yet.
And I guess he had the one, the sack fumble, right? But in terms of throwing an interception, that's true.
That's right. He did have a pick.
That's true. But it hasn't been. I don't think you look at that and say this has been. It's been glaring bad decisions forcing the ball into bad spots. Some people think maybe he should be more aggressive and try to force the ball in. Gus Bradley even said he needs to be looking to take more shots. He
needs to stop patting and throw the ball.
Right, down the field. So if it becomes clear or if the feeling is that Henne is holding them back in some way, and that's widespread outside the building.
But let me just interject right there. Is he holding them back? I don't think it's necessarily Chad Henne is holding them back. It's the process and what they have on offense that's holding them back. It takes time for a quarterback to trust a wide receiver. When you see Chad Henne and he's looking at it, you know, as far as looking at the route, looking at the wide receiver, and then he pats the ball, that is a lack of confidence that the receiver is going to be where he needs to be when I'm going to go ahead and cut this ball loose. I mean, that's what needs to change. You know, the trust between the quarterback and the wide receiver. So it's not just on the quarterback. It's on the offensive line. It's on the quarterback. It's also on the wide receivers.
All right, hold that thought. Let's get a call or two in real quick, starting with Carl. 641-1010 is the number. Good morning, Carl. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep.
With the offensive line so leaking like it was, you don't think it would have helped to kind of move the pocket a little bit, have them try to throw in a run or anything like that?
Well, that's what they did. And see, the problem with that is moving the pocket. Okay, that's bootlegs, half rolls, and Ryan Kerrigan got a sack on a bootleg that I showed last night. The linebacker, Perry Riley Jr. and Arakpo got another sack on a play action. I mean, play action is when you're moving the pocket. The problem is if you're not running the football with success, and if I'm a defensive end, okay, and I'm playing the Jaguars, and they're running for about a 1.1 yard per carry clip. Am I worried about the running game of the Jaguars, or am I going to go, you know what, I'm going to split the difference here on this angle, and so that I can maybe fall in late and maybe allow a little bit more in the running game so that I can be prepared to play the quarterback because that's a big play. You know, so that's got to run the football better.
Carl, thank you for the call. Let's go to Brian up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. Thanks for the call, or thanks for taking my calls. Jeff, I have a question. When a team is playing as bad as we are, what is practice like? Do we have to concentrate on the team getting better, or can you game plan? I mean, how can practice be both?
Well, I mean, it is both. It's always both. I mean, typically in the National Football League, you got about 2.5 hours on the field on Wednesday, about the same on Thursday. Friday can be about 2 hours. and they cut it back a lot just to get a team physically ready. But both of those occur. You have individual periods and then you have team periods. The individual periods is working on getting better technique-wise, fundamentally sound. And then when you go to 9-on-7, 7-on-7, and team periods, that's all specific game plan things. You know, and it's difficult to really, okay, let's expand the game plan for an offense that's playing 8 guys or 7 guys that are basically in their first year playing. That's hard to do. Very hard to do.
Jeff Logman's here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today. We'll continue with your calls at 641-1010. More on the quarterback situation as well. What is Chad Henne's role in those 10 sacks that were allowed to the Washington Redskins, or what degree of blame and responsibility does he have on those? That's been a big talking point. We'll ask Jeff. He's watched the film. He'll discuss that with you. Coming up next, Jaguars Today in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. By the way, the music theme, I believe, was pretty evident right from the jump here. We had LL Cool J featuring Lloyd Banks, Hands Up. That's Protect the Bank action, Tony. Who else did we have in here, Warren?
50 Cent.
Start things off with. We had Biddy.
Biddy.
And
Straight to the Bank.
Who else did you have?
We've had a lot of Lloyd Banks, because apparently there's not a lot of artists with Bank in the name.
Ernie Banks didn't do a whole lot of music, is what you're telling me. You don't even know who that is.
No, I don't.
That's all right. Just laugh along with it like I made a funny.
Sure.
Protect the Bank this week, 633-2000 for Jaguar tickets. Go to jaguars.com/tickets. Home opener against the equally winless Indianapolis Colts coming to town. World's largest video screens, the pools in full display, the whole nine yards. What is Fortunato laughing at me for over there?
Left Bank, Walk Away, Renee.
That's our next music selection, I guess.
A band?
I guess.
Okay.
Walk Away, Renee. Don't just walk away, Renee. I think I know that song. You probably know that song, too. That's an old one. Yeah, you probably would.
Don't recall that.
If you heard it, I think you'd know it. Anyway, Chad Henne's responsibility in these 10 sacks. Okay, the Play the Kid crowd thinks it's 100% culpability. And Blake Bortles will play with an impenetrable shield around him, and his savvy will lead him to never be sacked. But for these 10, Jaguar franchise record allowed, how much was Henne culpable? How much was it simply a couple of jailbreak situations? How did you break it down?
It's hard to know for sure, because when you watch the routes, you're judging the play saying, okay, that was on Chad. Because you're looking at the routes, assuming that they're correct. You know, so it's very difficult to put an actual number on it. But from what you saw, like the bootleg in which he got sacked by Ryan Kerrigan, Mercedes had 4 yards on the linebacker. Chad could have dumped that ball off. I mean, he's got to make that play. I mean, if I had to put a number on it, you know, and it's hard to be accurate, I'd say 3 on Chad, maybe 4 on Chad, probably 4 on the offensive line where he had no chance, and then 3 or 4 on the wide receivers, you know. So, I mean, it's about one-third.
Gotcha. Okay. Just curious, because, and even you watching the film, it's impossible to know.
You don't know.
Unless you know every assignment, every route that's
supposed
to be run.
Unless I walk across the hall.
Sit down with Jed Fish, right?
All right, Jed, tell me the deal.
Right.
You know,
because he knows.
And absolutely he knows. Now, there's some instances where it's on the wide receivers, but maybe the quarterback had a chance to do something, you know. So it's you have to, and that's, you know, I think Cecil yesterday, in part of his defense of Chad Henne when he was asked the question in his interview, you know, he said, when people don't know, I mean, look, I played the game, I study the game, watch the game, and go back and watch the film and study it more. And you still don't know exactly what the design of the offense is. So, Tony, when you go and watch the All-24, you can assume or think that you know, but in reality you don't, because even I don't know exactly what the route tree is supposed to be based on adjustments or a hot read or what the play design is. You know, so it's difficult. But I can tell you,
other than Jed joining us on Tuesdays, we'll take Logan.
It's not all on the quarterback, I can tell you that.
All right, but it certainly
bears some
responsibility. There's no question about that. I don't think you get sacked 10 times. Your guess is he thinking above all else, let's not turn this football over. Let's not force it into a bad, let's not make a bad situation worse. Should he be just maybe, you know what, living to fight another day, throwing that ball away as soon as it doesn't look good
right
off the jump?
That would help.
Right.
You know, whether it be, you know, throwing it to an open guy, throwing the ball away, just making an aggressive throw and letting the wide receiver have a chance at it to make a play. I mean, it, you know, some of those are on the quarterback.
Right. Sometimes no you got to give him a 50-50 ball and risk throwing the pick. You got to let your guy come up with it.
And it's interesting in that very few young quarterbacks ever talk in those terms. But when you talk to Blake in the preseason, he talked about risk reward. So he's aware. He's a very aware young player in that, okay, if this guy looks covered and he's being covered in man, and I know that the safety's not going to be over the top to help, throw it. You know, and young quarterbacks don't talk like in those terms. And so that's what kind of excites me about Blake Bortles. He is aware of the risk and reward, you know, process in throwing a football.
Chad's not completely immobile. He's not as mobile as Blake Bortles appears to be.
You know, Chad he's got very good athleticism. But there's something about a quarterback's innate ability in the pocket.
To slide.
We saw it last night in Andrew Luck. Probably one of the best I've ever seen in the pocket, in working the pocket and buying time, keeping his shoulder square, and also always being a threat once he does escape out of the pocket. Nobody that I have seen is probably better than Andrew Luck at that. And I'm not saying that Blake Bortles has that to that degree of Andrew Luck. But you see signs of it, of him moving in the pocket in subtle ways to find an open lane or to escape a pressure and throw the football.
All right. This is an impossible question to answer. I'm going to ask you anyway because fans want to know your opinion on this. If Blake had played that game, right, are we looking at half the sacks? Are we looking at, say, impossible to tell? Because
it's hard to tell.
There may be, my contention is there may be instances where he gets you out of this situation, but maybe because of his inexperience, puts you in a different situation.
That's right.
Right? So it may, you know, your best guess, what, even kind of even out on a day like that?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to forecast that because, you know, in some ways you would get better, and then in other ways,
you might give something up.
That's right.
Right.
You know, the package may be limited more just because he's so young.
But ultimately, look, I agree with this line of thinking at this point. You're losing by 31 anyway. Whether he makes it a little bit better or a little bit worse, won't his long-term development be speeded up, in your opinion, by playing him? I think you agree with that. You'd play him.
I thought when the game got to the point in Washington to where, you know, clearly, it's not going to happen.
It's over, right.
You know, you're not going to come back and be, you know, Andrew Luck against the Denver Broncos and have a chance to win it at the end of the game. I thought at that point, take Blake Bortles, put him in. Okay, the weakest part of their offense right now is the running game.
Yes.
Put him in there and run the football and let him throw a little bit. Because you need to work on your running game, and it's a great opportunity for him to get experience in a game situation on the road.
Were you surprised that Gus said he didn't
consider it? No, I wasn't surprised. You know, Gus and Dave are committed. I mean, they're committed to what they believe what should happen with Blake Bortles. I mean, they know a lot more than I do. But at the same time, I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. What a final thought, and then we'll go to some of these phone calls here. Alan Hurns gets hurt late. They're throwing passes.
Run the ball.
Right. I mean, that's a situation you just get out of there, right?
And I go back to what I said about Blake, in that at that point in the ball game, run the football because you need to work on it anyway.
Right.
Put him out there and call your offense up. Guys, let me tell you something. We got 5 minutes to play here, okay? We're going to run the football. We're going to run the football for 5 minutes. This is a 9-on-7 period for us. Strap it up, tighten your chin strap, and we're going to run the football. Because we need to get better at it, period. And not put, you know, look, everybody's at risk every play.
Understood.
Okay? Alan Hurns was at risk, you know, on that play. You know, you run the football for 5 minutes, you know, okay, maybe an offensive line running back's at risk for getting
you're dropping your
so
risk.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
You're dropping your risk just because of the number of snaps that you're getting.
6-4-1-10-10. Let's go to the lines. I hear Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. Fred, you're up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
You know, throughout this whole process, I've been thinking, despite what everybody else is saying, that he needs to sit a year. And I was looking back and thinking of draft picks, Carson Palmer and Aaron Rodgers and guys who have sat a first year and been successful. And even looking at when people say, you know, even on a college version, like Jameis Winston and Johnny Manziel win the Heisman, but they were a redshirt freshman. They sat a year. But you said something earlier, Jeff. You said now, based on everything and what they're saying in the locker room, you think they're even. But if they're even, then Blake Bortles is ahead. He doesn't need to be ahead to win the job. If they're even, then he's ahead because his trajectory is up and Chad Henne's trajectory is nothing.
I agree with you. I mean, that's kind of the point that I was trying to make, and that I think they're even, but the ceiling is higher with Blake Bortles, and it is the inevitable. So go ahead. But I also understand the thinking in that let's get things a little bit more right around that position before we go ahead and say, let's make the move.
Right. And I also understand those fans say, look, it's logical. It's never going to be perfect.
But it's logical. Their approach is logical. And you have to be able to make logical decisions. But it's also a logical decision to say, it's probably even. You know, we may have to scale back. Yes, it's going to be rough, but let's just go ahead and let them fight through it.
641-1010, Joe the Cabbie, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Before we get the question here, you know, he brought up, you know, Aaron Rodgers and other guys that sat, okay?
You could also bring up guys that played.
Well, who's to say that if Aaron Rodgers played his, you know, first year, wouldn't have had success? How do you know?
Right.
Okay.
Or by year two, wouldn't have been where he was, you know, in year four.
Who's to say that if Blaine Gabbert sat for 5 years, he would be good?
Right.
You don't know.
Right.
You just don't know.
Look, it's worked both ways.
But here's the thing. If you're making that decision, you have to have confidence. You have to have the belief that what you're deciding to do, you have to be convicted. You have to be supremely confident that what you're doing is right. And most importantly, you have to make sure that that locker room feels that it's right. That's the most important
obviously
thing.
In the case of Aaron Rodgers, he had a 3-time MVP playing in front of him as well, you know, compared to Chad Henne. And that's what fans are looking at as well. It's a little more understandable why that guy had to sit. Joe, the Cabbie, you're up next. What's going on?
Hey, what's happening, fellas? I like Gus Bradley, and I remember what really drove me to him is when he came in, he said, the thing we're going to work on, being that we're a young team, is we're going to work on what you're best at. You know what I mean? What you're best at. And the play calling seemed like it don't fit the personnel. That's the only problem I have. They're doing a stress play with I forget the running back name.
Toby.
Gerhardt, and to me, it's like you're not fooling anyone with that play. And it just seemed like the play calling ain't matching our personnel. It seemed like that's not the best play for Henne or Gerhardt, or just the offense all in together. And,
well, the play calling always sucks when it doesn't work. You know, I mean, that's the case. I mean, you look at last year. And you look at the first eight games and then the last eight games. In the first eight games, Jed Fish was terrible. And then the last eight games, you're like, oh, okay, he's pretty doggone good. He's innovative, right? Because it worked.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the life of a play caller in the National Football League. You know, what the Jaguars are running is no different than what, you know, the most successful offenses in the National Football League are running for the most part. The Washington Redskins are running outside zone and inside zone. That's what the Jaguars run. Well, how come they can make it look so good and the Jaguars aren't making it look so good? The execution is not there. You know, it takes time. They're young.
If the execution is there, is Toby Gerhardt, in your opinion, a good fit for this style of offense? Clearly, they feel he must be because they went out and went right after him, right?
Yeah, I think he can do it. I think it's a matter of, one, is Toby getting comfortable in it? It's also a matter of the offensive line getting comfortable in it. And it just takes time. And you remember the call last week where the guy kind of called up? We were kind of confused about exactly what he was asking.
Yes. You know? it happens all the time.
and he made mention of, you know, why I'm kind of a pessimistic, you know, about this football team. That's it right there in Washington. This is an offense in transition. It's going to take time for this offense. That's why they went out and got Ziggy Hood and Red Bryant, Chris Clemens, you know, to be able to allow this offense the time to grow and then have a stout defense, which wasn't stout in Washington.
So what happened there?
They're getting a pass.
Well, and they really, we talked about them yesterday as being the biggest culprit here. I mean, I think the offensive line is a glaring culprit in this particular situation, but 41 points allowed. This is, you know, we talked about this is supposed to be the team that when things aren't going right on offense, they at least keep you within striking distance. What happened this week?
Some breakdowns in coverage, some mental errors on defense, and then, you got to be a little bit better on the perimeter, and the linebacking position has to be better. I think Dakota Watson has to be better. You know, there's another example of a guy that missed all of the offseason, a lot of training camp, still trying to find his way. I think once he gets back and into his groove, I think he's going to be a fantastic player. But, I mean, even some guys on that group are missing Jonathan Cyprien, best player. By the way, Josh Evans, I thought, had a big improvement from the game in Philadelphia to the game in Washington.
It looked like it on TV.
Yeah, he played much better. He tackled solid. I like Josh Evans.
If that's the case, was the absence of Cyprien should have been that glaring?
Dwayne Grotz had a tough day.
But that's not due to Cyprien not being there, right? That's
no,
Grotz having a tough day.
He's got to take care of his own responsibility. Do your job.
Jeff Logman, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars today continuing in a moment with a look at the fan feedback spotlight, asking you, now that you've had 2 weeks to do a little scouting, how do you see the AFC South picture at the moment? We'll get some of your responses to that coming up, maybe some more phone calls as well. Jaguars today rolls on from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios on 1010XL. 92.5 FM.
This is Atlanta Falcons QB Matt Ryan.
This is Marshall Faulk.
This is NFL Hall of Famer Randy White.
And you are listening to 1010XL.
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 92.5 FM.
Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony. Jaguars today. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Tomorrow, we'll award a pair of tickets to the home opener. Come out and protect the bank this week. If you don't have your ticket, 633-2000, jaguars.com/tickets as well. Foundation Professionals of Florida recognizes the fan base as the foundation of the organization. They know that taking care of your home's foundation is going to go a long way to protecting your most important investment. Call Foundation Professionals of Florida if you have any concerns about your home's foundation at 287-2690. Or visit foundationprosfl.com. Two tickets tomorrow we'll give away from the Foundation Professionals photo contest we've been running on the Facebook page. Section 216. Those are pretty good.
They got pool passes with that?
Sure. Not the Jags pools, but I'm sure there's a neighbor that has a pool that you can take a dip in on the way to the game if you want to. No pool passes with that, Jeff. Just good old-fashioned seats for you to be a part of the experience protecting the bank this weekend as the Jags open up with the Indianapolis Colts. We'll get more from Jeff Logman coming up here momentarily. Let's take a look at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight today. Tony, we asked folks, after 2 weeks of scouting the AFC South, have they changed your opinion? How do they rank this division on how it's going to end up? What do we get?
Here's what we got from Derwent. We got Indy first, Houston second, Jags still in third, and Titans four. Very early in the season, everyone needs to calm down. Hashtag Jaguars today. From at Irish Jaguar, Colts first, Texans second, Titans third, Jags in last. Hashtag Jaguars today. From Nick, Houston, Indy, Tennessee, Jacksonville. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag last place. Hashtag Cellar Dwellers. From Sean, we got number one Jacks, number two Jacks, number three Jacks, number four Jacks. Come on, people, have faith. Stand united. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag real fans only. Hashtag yes we con. From Hodari, we got the Jags are
Wait
the NFL.
This real fans thing, by the way. So a real fan, it has to be one who just thinks they're always going to win. Is that what the definition of that person's definition
That's
of a real fan would be?
According to Sean, apparently,
okay.
Yes.
All right, I don't agree with that, but moving on.
Hodari says the Jags are the NFL definition of a handicapped team. Colts, Texans, Titans,
I was
Jags.
Asking you to handicap the division
right.
race.
From Zariah, we got Indy, Houston, Jacksonville, Tennessee. Hashtag Jaguars today. And from Eric, I will stand by my original order of Indy, Houston, Jacksonville, and then Tennessee. No change yet. Too soon. Hashtag Jaguars today. Hashtag Logman rocks.
Logman does rock, and he educates every Tuesday. By the way, 7 or 8 the responses on Facebook, all of them have the Jags in last place, except for Cass Bridges, who's going with the Jags, still winning the division, hashtag not giving up yet. So I guess Cass would qualify as a real fan, right?
Sounds like it.
I think you could be a fan, you could be a realistic fan, you could be a pie-in-the-sky fan, you can be any kind of fan you want.
Absolutely.
It's still, you're still a fan, nonetheless.
As long as you care, that's the definition of a fan for me.
And to some people, there's different degrees of caring. Like, hey, they care, they want them to win, but yeah, it's not going to ruin their week. Other people are in the dumps for 2 or 3 days after the Jags lose. I mean, hey, that's your prerogative.
I'm excited about the season, maybe more so than I have been in a long time, because I think that at the end of the season, if you complete the season, regardless of the record, to be grammatically correct.
Very nice catch.
Regardless of the record, if you have identified that you have a franchise quarterback and you have a young ascending skill position group at the wide receiver spot, because it is very young, hold on to your pants, because this team's going to be good for a decade. I was actually texting a good friend of mine, Gordon, yesterday, and he's, you know, down in the dumps, you know, and he's like, you know, here we go again. You know, we got hammered in Washington. I said, look, just take a deep breath, okay? Have a little patience. At some point, we're going to see Blake Bortles. And when we see Blake Bortles, that's the time where you want to fix your eyes on this football team and see what's happening. If he's a franchise guy and he starts showing those traits, everything else is beautiful. I can tell you that.
But that's the big if, right? And we're hopeful, but that's obviously. No,
and I'm not trying to put it all on him, but that's the reality.
Oh, it's.
If you have a franchise guy, you are good for a decade.
Yeah, and they can overcome a lot of
other things
around him, without question.
Look at the Indianapolis Colts when they had Peyton Manning. Did they have great draft picks? You know, after they got.
They had a pretty good run for about six or seven years. Go look at the first round picks if they.
Early.
That's for about 6 or 7 years, though.
Early.
Okay.
Reggie Wayne. Then they built Marvin the Harrison team. Before
Dwight
Peyton Freeney. Manning. Dwight Freeney. Okay, keep going. Get past Dwight Freeney.
Who they have. Who was the. Tarek Glenn.
He was long before Peyton Manning.
Was he before Peyton?
I'm talking about.
I think if you go back and look.
I'm talking after Dwight Freeney. Who did they have? It didn't matter.
All right, but you're talking about
Jerry
a guy,
Hughes.
No, I understand that the second half of Polian's tenure there, he whiffed a lot more than he hit. But he built a pretty good core. That Dallas Clark, another guy, another first round pick, a pretty damn good player. You're just Dallas Clark.
I'm just telling you.
I'm telling you, though, they had a 6 or 7 year run, including Manning, that built the star core of that team.
I'm not saying that that's not the case. I'm just saying, you take Dallas Clark, okay? You take all of those guys and put them on another football team.
I got you. Peyton's going to make them all better. I'm not down that. Dwight Freeney, by the way, still wreaking havoc this weekend against Seattle for the San Diego Chargers. That's a hell of a player, right?
He's
there.
A very good player.
By the way, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight. Obviously brought to you by the entire family of dealerships, which includes Tom Bush BMW, the Certified Edge sales event going on for the remainder of September. You can enjoy 1.9% APR, up to $1,500 credit on many 2011 and 2012 certified pre-owned BMWs at Tom Bush BMW. You're Jeff Loggeman. You're in charge of the team. How are you attacking the Indianapolis Colts from a defensive standpoint first? Let's start there. What are you doing defensively as you're getting prepared to play Andrew Luck and the Colts?
After having some of the breakdowns that the Jaguars defense had in Washington, I'm playing them very vanilla. I'm not overly concerned about the running game whatsoever. The one running back that I think is a very good player is Ahmad Bradshaw. The other guy, Trent Richardson,
yeah,
who they traded a first-round pick for, I think, to me, is an average back at best. He doesn't have vision. He doesn't have speed to hit the hole. He doesn't run through the hole with great speed. He's probably a fifth-round talent, and they gave up a first and more for him. Huge mistake.
Was it more, or did they just?
No, I think it was more. I think it was a first and something else.
All right.
To me, that was a mistake. And maybe it was just a first. I'm not exactly sure. But just giving up a first?
So what are you doing? You blitzing Luck?
No.
You
I'm playing coverage. I'm playing vanilla. I'm playing the stuff that I know mentally we're not going to bust. That's it. I'm being very simple, very basic, and hoping that we can get about five opportunities at sacks. And I say opportunities because that quarterback is one of the best at avoiding them.
Yeah, and he's a big, strong guy, tough to bring down.
And he runs through it, and he can get rid of the ball in a hurry. To me, it's all about this offense against a Colts defense that's not very good. I mean, I think Jarrell Freeman is a very good player, but he was injured, didn't play last night. They got DeQuell Jackson from the Cleveland Browns, good, solid player. LaRon Landry, I think, is at times a liability in coverage. Antoine Bethea is no longer roaming the secondary. The one guy that likes to call his grandma when something dramatic happens, Vontae Davis, I think is a solid player. I just don't think they have a lot of talent on defense.
So what do you do there? Do you try? They haven't shown a lot of pass rush.
Bjorn Werner is not a first round pick.
And done anything so far.
Eric Walden, good solid football player. You know, I think if there was ever a game to get right offensively, this is the game to have that happen.
And how would you go about that? Do you try to force the run, or do you try to stick with it to finally get something going, or do you say, you know what, if we're not having success, we're just going to open this thing up, we're going to continue to throw?
You got
to
throw it. I mean, and what kind of a running game are you going to attack the Colts with Mickey Shuler Jr. as your tight end?
Right.
Yeah, when not having Mercedes Lewis, that hurts so bad for a rushing attack that is just non-existent. It's going to be hard to run the football. I'd spread them out, three wide receivers, a lot of quick throws. You're not worrying like you were last week, like you were against the Redskins, about only getting three guys out in routes because you got to protect the quarterback.
Right.
Let Chad Henne dink and dunk, controlled passing attack, and then keep them off balance with a rushing attack.
How much was Washington able to sit there and say, you know what, there's no threat to blow by us here? They were sitting on all those little short routes. I mean, do you have to at least try show them that you're willing to try and stretch the field early like they did against the Redskins? Mm-hmm. Hearns dropped the ball.
That was a great move, by the way.
That was a great double move. Oh,
that was one of the best moves that I've seen. And you're talking about a veteran player that's been around the league for a long time, and Washington Redskins cornerback D'Angelo Hall. And D'Angelo Hall left his jock back on the ground. And we're talking a rookie wide receiver that's playing like he's got some veteran savvy to him. Allen Hurns is a good football player, folks. I hope he can play this week because he is one of the guys that quarterbacks, they trust him. And that was an outstanding route. He had another route just like that in the opening week against Philadelphia, the one that he caught coming out when they were backed up at the one.
Right.
And it's another beautiful route. Allen Hurns is, here's what I envision in the future. Just throwing it out there. If Marquise Lee doesn't start cleaning up his assignments, cleaning up and showing his athletic ability that we know he has, because I go back to training camp and there was a one-on-one drill, cornerbacks, defensive backs against wide receivers. It was the most dominant one-on-one period that I've ever seen a wide receiver have by Marquise Lee. It didn't matter who lined up across from him. Will Blackman, Alan Ball, Dwayne Gross, it didn't matter. Marquise Lee ate him up. He's got to show that. He's got to be a fundamentally sound. He's got to be assignment sound to show that. But I'm telling you, Allen Robinson, when he gets everything figured out and gets up to speed physically, that guy's a stud.
He's Jeff Logman. Thanks to Dakota Watson for joining us on the Garber Auto Mall Hot Seat.